Men Calling On Demand is made possible by Welsh & Forbes, working with clients to manage the full range of events that come with building wealth, from investments to trustee services. More at welshforbes.com. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, strengthening Maine's coastal and island communities through education, health, and support. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
Today on Maine Calling, plastics in our environment. The amount of plastic in the world is hard to fathom. More than 9 billion tons of non-recycled plastic products were produced between 1950 and 2017. The vast majority of that has been buried in landfills. And the production of plastic is expected to just grow. Plastics cause all kinds of problems. They give off greenhouse gases, kill wildlife, and harm human health. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will learn about negotiations towards a new international plastics agreement that started yesterday. We'll also learn what kind of plastics are recyclable and what aren't, how recycled plastic is used, and what Maine is doing to confront this global problem. Maine Calling is just ahead. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling.
Are you listening?
Yes, I am.
Plastics.
Exactly. How do you mean?
There's a great future in plastics. Think about it.
Of course, what you just heard is from the 1967 movie The Graduate, and how prescient that statement was. Today, the world produces 1,000 times more plastic products each year than it did in the 1960s, and that amount is just growing. Today, we're going to talk about the harm caused by plastics on the environment and humans, and what role recycling plays in reducing those impacts. Joining me today, Sarah Nichols, who is Sustainable Maine Director for the Natural Resources Council of Maine, and Matt Grondin, Director of Communications and Public Affairs for Eco Maine. What are your questions about plastics in our environment, what Maine is doing, and what the world needs to do next? You can send an email to talk@mainpublic.org, post a comment on social media, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Welcome to both of you. Sarah, we've been hearing about how plastics are harmful to the environment. Can you sort of give us a synopsis of the ways in which plastics cause harm?
Sure, yes. Thanks for having me on the show. I'll try to be as concise as possible because the problems are pretty much endless. I think in short, people have been just very irresponsible in their use of plastics, and there are harmful impacts from from cradle to grave. So say from the front end where plastics are made, where the refineries and the petrochemical plants are, all of the people who live around those plants, who work in those plants, suffer health consequences. There's a place called, unfortunately, Cancer Alley. It's an 85-mile stretch along the Mississippi River in Louisiana, where a quarter of our petrochemical and refineries, plastic refineries are. And of course, most of those people that live in those communities are, it's predominantly Black or low-income communities. And then these materials travel all over the world, make it to market, go home with people. We're finding people eat about a estimated credit card's worth of plastic every single week. It's leaching into our food, it's in our water. And then, of course, when it comes to disposal, these materials either go, to recycling, or they're burned in an incinerator, or they're in a landfill forever, or they're released into the environment where they become, where their litter, most of the debris in the ocean is made up of plastic. And I could go on and on about all the reasons why that's bad, but I think that's pretty intuitive for most people.
Yeah, I think many people have seen those videos of the big rafts of plastic, big is an understatement, huge, enormous rafts of plastic in the ocean. Matt, let's bring it to home, back down to home. Plastics that come to Eco Maine, what happens to them? I know that there are a lot of plastics that just have been thrown out in people's trash, but then there are also people who are putting things in the recycling bin. Can you tell us sort of about today what the waste stream in Maine is for plastic products.
Sure, and thanks again, Jennifer, for having EcoMaine on. We are the recycling and waste manager for a significant portion of Maine. And, you know, we end up with hundreds of tons every year of plastic material in our recycling plant. And a lot of that is great recyclable material. It might be a milk jug or a water soda bottle, yogurt cups, things like that. Those are really important materials to try and recover. We don't want those to go to landfill. Those are recoverable materials. Those are materials that make new products after they're sorted here at EcoMaine. And, at the end of the day, it's really quite important to have those re-enter the supply chain again, rather than just sitting in a landfill or being tossed into the environment, as Sarah pointed out. You know, the hundreds of tons, last year, for example, EcoMaine received about 950 tons of plastic material in our recycling facility. And we gained for our member communities almost $750,000 in revenue. Those plastics then turn into new water bottles, new carpet, new fabric, and everyday items like car bumpers and things like that. Plastics manufacturers are hopefully, and are in practice using this material to make new plastics products instead of going to make virgin plastic out of the petrochemicals that Sarah mentioned. So, you know, reemploying those materials is really important. And
Matt, let me ask you this. What percentage of plastics, what's the estimate right now? What percentage of plastics are actually making it into the recycling system, and how much is being just thrown away?
Sure. That's a great question, and it depends on where you live, frankly. At EcoMaine, we're proud to recycle a significantly larger portion of plastic materials than, you know, somebody who lives in a place where only number ones or number two plastics are recycled. So we take those hundreds of tons of plastic every year, which amounts to anywhere between, 20 and 35%. And that's, that's plastic that's recyclable. It's the water bottles and milk jugs that I mentioned. And not, the styrofoam, not the plastic bags, not the PVC pipes, the things that are created to be, unfortunately, disposed of. So, we're looking at about a third, and we can do better. I think if we can manufacture items that are more readily recyclable, we can recover more of those.
Sarah.
Sure. So this issue of how much plastic is actually getting recycled, I feel like is a really hot topic right now. And I'm glad that Matt pointed out that it's really specific to how you look at it, because it just depends on what numbers you use as well and what you're talking about exactly. So there was, a Greenpeace report that came out not too long ago that said that no plastic was recyclable, and it was, 5% of plastic is recycled. And the numbers weren't exactly, truthful or accurate. And so to get that number, they were taking all plastics, say all the plastics made from, that's in an airplane and your car and the stapler on your desk and your computer, and the stuff that's not necessarily going into the recycling stream, and using that in the denominator, which really doesn't paint the right picture. But if you just look at packaging, or if you just look at a beverage container specifically, the numbers are much greater. So packaging recycling, while still not great, is probably closer to like 9 or 10%. And if you're looking at bottle bill material and bottles in general, the recycling rate is even much higher than that, closer to 30%. So it really depends on what numbers you're using and how you're looking at it. The point being, I don't want people to lose faith in recycling, because recycling is happening. And when you see it and you're going places, there is recycling of plastic happening out there. And I don't want people to lose faith in recycling entirely.
Yeah, and Matt, I know that in your world, this Greenpeace report has really caused a lot of controversy and a lot of frustration.
Absolutely. As Sarah pointed out, I think I would almost call it a disservice to recycling to say that, you know, such a small percentage of plastic is being recycled, that, you know, that people shouldn't put their faith in this process, because, you know, it's the best solution that we have currently to address the plastic that's out there. You know, it's the plastic material that is being created every day. We want to reduce that. We want to, you know, promote reusable activities and materials. That's important. But, you know, don't lose sight of the fact that plastic materials that are being created every day, a lot of those can be recycled, and we need to push for more access and more, more, you know, overall recycling of those materials as much as we can.
Sarah, part of the reason we're doing this program today, as opposed to 2 months before now or after now, is that brand new global negotiations are underway, just started yesterday, that are going to try to get hundreds of countries together to look at this issue and to reduce the harms caused by plastics. Tell me how this will work. How are we negotiating the use and reuse of plastic globally?
So I think it'll be really interesting to see how this negotiation unfolds. So this is the UN Environment Assembly brought together 150 countries in Uruguay, started yesterday for at the beginning of a 2-year negotiation. And then what they're going to try to do is come up with legally binding treaty that has rules and strategies to tackle plastic pollution, plastic recycling, and the social and health impacts. So I think to me, there's not going to be one silver bullet. I'm assuming it's going to be kind of all the different ways we need to tackle this. You know, we need all the different solutions. So I'll be eager to see what they come up with.
Sarah, tell me about some of the ways Maine specifically is trying to tackle plastic pollution. We have some new laws.
We do. And I'm really excited about our new laws. Maine is really leading the way in the United States when it comes to recycling laws and plastics specifically. So, you know, basically, we're starting with the Wild West of plastics. Like I said, we've been really irresponsible. And now we're just trying to rein this in with new laws and new ways of going about it. So, you know, Maine, we banned some unnecessary plastics, like plastic shopping bags and foam food containers. And we have passed a First in the Nation law that requires producers of packaging materials to pay for our recycling programs. And that is going to be a game changer. So that's called Extended Producer Responsibility for Packaging. And through this law, we are going to have a greater sense of how much packaging is sold into Maine. That will have to be, there'll be fees associated with that based on how much and the type of material you're sending in. So let's say producers of plastic packaging who are using a highly recyclable, easy to understand label for recycling are going to pay a lot less into the system than if they're using like a really unvaluable kind of confusing, detrimental form of plastic packaging, let's say. So that'll hopefully get at the design aspect of this. And then our municipalities are going to have the funding and resources they need to have robust recycling programs. So I think that and it's going to have a major focus on reduction and reuse, of course. And then third, it will focus on increasing our recycling capacity and ability here in Maine.
We'll go to Darcy, who's calling from North Yarmouth. Hi, Darcy. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks. I want to shout out, too, to the great work that EcoMaine does. I am co-chair of North Yarmouth's Recycling Committee, and as an experiment, we hosted a Plastic-Free October, which we hope will become an annual event. We had some really good responses, because part of the solution to these plastics is to stop using them. And there's a ton of, we have a bunch of information on the town website under recycling and on the town Facebook page about sustainability swaps, things that we can do, like plastic straws are horrible and ubiquitous in landfills and in the ocean. You could bring your own straw, you could bring your own cup. There's also a lot of products, household things that we can begin to use to change over. Like I use True Earth laundry strips, so I don't, there's no plastic. They come in the mail in a cardboard envelope. And so you can get dish soap dishwasher pods, laundry soap, all sorts of things, shampoos, everything in bars, so they're not in plastic bottles in the first place. So I think that's part of the answer.
Yeah, Darcy, thank you so much for calling in. And I'll put this back at you. It's almost impossible today, though, to completely not use plastic. I'm talking to you with two computer screens in front of me, and they are encased in plastic. Talk to me about trying to live in this modern world and avoid plastic.
So what I found, sillily, but was worth it. I tried to do plastic free for 1 year. And I quickly found out that that's not doable. But what I did learn was how much plastic I use on a daily basis, which I wasn't even really aware of. So to me, the plastic free is that very few households can do what it takes to be plastic free completely, but it can raise our awareness and we start finding all sorts of ways that we can really reduce our use of plastics. And to me, that's we're moving in that direction. Along with all the other strategies, you know, better recycling, the packaging laws that you were just talking about. So to me, it's aspirational and it's a learning curve.
Darcy, thanks so much for calling in. Sarah, earlier we were talking about some of Maine's newer laws. There are some more that you want to mention.
Right. Yes. So, you know, Maine's bottle bill really started as a way to reduce roadside plastic litter, and it's been extremely effective in doing so. And we have one of the strongest bottle bills in the country. But more recently, we've passed a minimum recycled content for plastic beverage container laws. So that means that there's going to be a more guaranteed demand. It's a demand side intervention for this that's really going to help recyclers rely on and boost recycling programs to get more of that material for the products that they're creating.
We're talking about plastics on Maine Calling. If you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566 or talk@mainepublic.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Our topic today, plastic pollution, how it harms our environment and what to do to reduce harm. With me, Matt Grondin, who is EcoMaine's Director of Communications and Public Affairs, and Sarah Nichols, Director of Sustainable Maine for the Natural Resources Council of Maine. Share your comments and questions by email, a brief email, please, talk@mainepublic.org. You can comment on social media or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. I'm going to go to an email from Stephen. Stephen writes, "It is my understanding that all plastics, save for number one and number two, are not easily recycled or repurposed. Is there any good news for our civilization's future about research and progress in recycling or reprocessing the other four categories in Maine or New England that could become a profitable industry for Maine?" Matt.
Thanks, Stephen. That's a great question. You know, I think it depends, again, on where you live. Fortunately, in EcoMaine's 73 member communities, we do accept number 3 through 7 plastics for recycling. They are made into, you know, various materials such as, HVAC vent tubes for your car or car bumpers or, plastic netting underneath that you put underneath a driveway or a patio. There are things that can be done with those plastics. We followed them downstream to our vendors, and we know that some of them right here in North America are doing really, really great things by recycling those plastics. That isn't the case everywhere. Admittedly, we want to keep those out of landfills as much as we can. That's our mission here at EcoMaine. But the value of those plastics in the end markets is not always there, and it is a problem. But really, at the end of the day, they are recyclable in large part. Those 3 through 7s, which are yogurt cups or sour cream containers, laundry baskets, and things like that. And so, we're keeping those out of landfills and turning them into new things. There are some things like chemical recycling on the horizon. Those are really, really unproven sorts of technologies at this point. You know, personally, I'm not holding out a whole lot of hope for those, but, you know, people are working on different ways of doing them. I think the ultimate that we can hope for and practice here at EcoMaine is, you know, the bottle to bottle and jug to jug and carton to carton recycling that we have and will continue to practice.
Sarah, tell us about the U.S. Plastics Pact.
Sure. It's actually pretty directly related to this question. Works out great. So the U.S. Plastics Pact is something that a bunch of really big brands and other organizations have signed onto. So this is like Nestle, Delhaize, Keurig, Dr. Pepper, Kimberly-Clark, Target, Walmart, Unilever, all these big companies have signed onto this pact to eliminate 11 different problematic and unnecessary types of plastics or formats of the plastics. And to me, this is really the way we need to go in relation to that question. Like, we should really start streamlining and limiting the types of plastics so there aren't so many different types out there, because it's really bungling up the whole system and it's completely unnecessary. So, you know, these are things like eliminating, you know, plastic cutlery, stirrers, straws, anything with PFAS, non-detectable pigments. So carbon black is really hard for some of the sorting facilities to identify. We don't need to be using those. Expanded polystyrene foam, so styrofoam, any problematic labels, stuff like this. And they do have a list of good plastics, which are pretty much limited to rigid number one and number two, rigid polypropylene plastic, and any polyethylene film that's available for drop-off is what they've limited to good plastics. And the goal is to reach all of this by 2025. So we'll see. Voluntary goals don't always bear fruit, but hopefully they'll lead to some policies that do.
All righty. I'm going to go to Torbert, who's calling from York. Hi, Torbert. Go ahead.
Good morning, Jennifer and guest. I'm afraid I'm going to be a skunk at the lawn party here. All the good work that your guests are trying to do amount to an exercise in futility as long as the source of all these plastics is allowed to create untrammeled production of them, and that's exactly what the petrochemical companies are doing. They have strategically switched their future from selling us fuels to selling us plastics, and the our inability to control 8 billion individual actions up against their determination to continue to flood the world with plastics, it's a terrible mismatch, and I'm afraid doomed to futility unless we can get at the source.
Torbert, thanks for your call. Sarah.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, actually. I don't think you're a skunk at all. But I do think we do need all hands on deck. And I'd love the focus on the producers of all of this material. I think often we're focusing on consumers and what can we do to, you know, avoid the plastic at the store, which is great and we should be doing, but the focus really does need to be on that. And like you said, the fossil fuel industry is the plastics industry. They're seeing the writing on the wall with our green energy transition, and they're focusing on ramping up plastics. So we need laws. We need enforceable laws and regulations to do this. Like I said, the voluntary isn't going to work. So, and I think we need to start in states doing this and hopefully lead to more federal and global policies that the world.
Torbert, thanks for your call. I'm going to go to an email from Maya, a Yarmouth High School student. And this is a very abbreviated version of her email. But she says, one thing I'm specifically interested in is the pyramid of importance when it comes to plastic. Reduce, reuse, recycle. We often focus so much of our energy on recycling plastic, when really the focus should be on how to reduce and reuse it. And she wants to know, how can we redesign our current systems to incorporate more reducing and reusing instead of focusing all our energy on recycling? Matt.
That's an astute comment by a young listener, and I love it. You know, it is hard. You know, when we talk about the solid waste hierarchy, reduce, reuse, recycle, and then on down to compost, waste energy, and landfill, there are real tangible things that, you know, one can associate with recycling. It's putting out the cart every week. It's putting putting your cans in the clink container or whatever the case might be. To focus on reduce and reuse, we need a lot of different tools. We need education. We need, consumer behavior. We need policy and laws that hopefully will help. The extended producer responsibility law is a great example. You know, where people have the choice, we know they prefer sustainable, recyclable material. But, you know, what happens if we take it up a level and, you know, are really promoting through education, policy, and consumer choice, these levers of reduce and reuse. So it really is a societal change that takes a lot, as Sarah's pointed out. It's through when you're at the grocery store, making the best choice with your wallet. It's in our state house and in Washington, making laws that, you know, are laying the groundwork for reduce and reuse. It's a less tangible thing than recycling every week, but it's critically important, and it's going to drive down single-use plastic usage, no doubt.
On the line with us now, Katie Weiler, who is the founder and president of Viable Gear. Thanks for calling in, Katie.
Hi, thank you very much for having me.
Tell us what Viable Gear aims to do.
Yeah, so Viable Gear is seeking to reduce petroleum-based plastics being used in the aquaculture and fishing industry. So basically plastics that are being made to go into the ocean that frequently turn into ghost gear. And ghost gear is a big problem for our oceans and accounts for about 80% of all macroplastics in our ocean and, you know, causes the death of marine species, but then also breaks down into microplastics that end up in our food systems. So we are trying to tackle that problem.
What made you decide to start the business?
Let's see. That's a great question. I got into the plastics crisis in about 2017, and I was working for a strategic consulting firm at the time. So, you know, I was into the strategy work and have a past in that, but then really, really got into this plastic space and what can we do to make a difference? And there were people working on land-based plastics as a problem. And at the same time, I was also plastic-free. I was probably about plastic-free for 3 years until the pandemic hit and had an Instagram that was kind of an educational tool and would go into classrooms and talk about single-use plastics and the like. And I moved back to Maine in 2019 and walking on the beaches in the summer, realizing, you know what, I kind of forgot about how much ghost gear there is here and what can I do about it? And I started to look up companies that might be doing stuff about ghost gear, and there weren't many. So I decided that I would take a stab at it.
Tell us about challenges you've encountered or how the business is going overall.
Yeah, it's, there's a lot of challenges in the R&D space. I'm not a polymer engineer, and I think so far for me, starting a company, that we really needed to work on a new material that isn't out there right now. So I failed to mention we're replacing petroleum-based plastics with a seaweed-based material. And the first products we are going to have are kelp seeding twine for kelp hatcheries and bait bags for the lobster and crab industry. So we are in a lab right now working on a seaweed-based material, and then we're also hopefully finding an external partner who might be a little bit further along who we could, really partner with to get that material accelerated. So there's been a lot of challenges in that space, but I think our biggest challenge will really be when we get the product out on the market and getting the pricing to be where virgin plastic pricing is, because right now these materials are made of just virgin nylon, and the plastics industry as a whole has done a really good job at making virgin plastics really cheap, and it's hard for biomaterials to compete with that. So we have a few ideas of how we might be able to to get the pricing down, but also then looking into possible government stipends and stuff like that. You know, how can we all work to make our oceans a little bit cleaner and safer?
Katie Weiler, thank you so much for calling in. Katie, the founder of Viable Gear. We're going to go to Joe, who's calling from Edgecombe. Hi, Joe. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I want to reiterate what Mr. Torbert had to say about the petroleum industry depending now as much on plastics as it is on fuel. A long time ago, I read an article about the possibility of making plastics from crustacean shells, specifically lobster shells, but I should think that crab shells, et cetera, would do as well. And I thought that was a nifty way of sparing.
Sure. Well, Sarah, let me turn to you. Do you know if there's any progress been made on that?
I wish I had a really good answer, but I do know that there, and I wish if Katie's still on, she could really speak to it, but because she's really talking about using non-petroleum based sources for plastic, and there are ways to do that. And, you know, I think it's great to have that type of material used instead, but when that material might end up in the recycling stream with the other types of plastics, it could be a contaminant. So I think it's just when we're making these switches out, we need to make sure that there's a collection strategy for what's going to happen with them afterwards that doesn't kind of, again, bungle up the recycling stream. But whatever we can do to reduce dependency on the fossil fuel petrochemical side is great.
Joe, thanks for your call. We are going to take another break. We're talking about plastics in the environment on Maine Calling. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You are listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, we're talking about plastics in the environment. My guests, Sarah Nichols with the Natural Resources Council of Maine and Matt Grondin with Eco Maine. Join our conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org or post on social media. We're going to go to Derek calling from Augusta. Hi, Derek. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm surprised, but not surprised that nobody's mentioned the epidemic of Amazon plastic packaging that they seem to wrap every single thing in. And I'm a mail carrier, and I see this particularly year round. And just during the holiday season, I'll hand out 3,000 to 4,000 of these things just in about 6 months. And I'm just curious, I don't think everybody really knows how many of these things are going worldwide. And I sort of agree with the skunk man about the two big players, the petrochemicals, but now it's Amazon. And everybody likes getting Amazon, and I guess messing with that giant would be nearly impossible at this point. But there's so many bubble mailers going around out there. It's like, where are these going?
Derek, thank you so much for that call. Matt, bubble wrap, bubble packaging, plastic envelopes. What is your advice?
Yeah, they are a problem. And, you know, it's encouraging to see sometimes they're transitioning to fiber-based packaging, which is great. It's not happening enough, I would say. We still see the stretchy plastic bags that come in the mail almost every day, right? Thousands a day, as Derek said. The transition from those plastics to the fiber-based recyclable material is going to be driven by consumer demand and policy. We're seeing the impact already, I think, of the momentum that extended producer responsibility is having. It's not just Maine, it's other states, it's Oregon, it's New York, it's Vermont. There are other states that are doing this now. And we're going to see the impact on places like Amazon, as big as they might be. When these policies take effect, we're going to see a transition from less recyclable to more recyclable material.
So I'm going to read a Facebook question, but it's related to what we're talking about, Matt. Marty says, Hannaford collects clean plastic bags of all types in a bin outside their stores. do the bags really get recycled? So I want you to answer Marty's question, but also talk about what can go into those. I'm pretty certain produce bags can, and maybe something that your paper towels might come in, but probably not the packages that come in the mail, correct?
Yeah, so to answer the question, bags and it's really that stretchy plastic material. It's that low density polyethylene material that comes in, used to come, I guess, in shopping bags, but now is found in bread bags and produce bags, dry cleaning bags, things like that. It's the material that is multi-layer or the for lack of a better word, crinkly kind of material. Think like a chip bag or, cellophane. Those kinds of plastics should stay out of those film collection bins. It is actually recycled. It turns generally into composite lumber, like Trex is the brand name lumber. An end market for that. It has to be pretty clean, though. So, we don't want our receipts hanging out in the bags. We don't want labels, things like that. And there's a great website that is available, filmplasticrecycling.org, I believe it is. And the Maine DEP has a list as well. I guess to answer the question pretty simply is stretchy plastic is okay if it's got that give to it like a bread bag, but if it's crinkly cellophane plastic, that should stay out.
And Sarah, I want to ask you about Derek's original point, which is, this is the holiday season and a lot of people are receiving things in the mail. And a lot of those, whether it's Amazon or L.L. Bean or Land's End, are coming in plastic mailers. What are those recyclable at all? What do you recommend someone do with them? Just throw them in the trash? And is there any alternative for these companies?
Right. I think having overpackaged items and is a unifying thing among people in general. Most people can agree they don't like overpackaged and wasteful materials arriving at their doorstep. So I think this is, I really perked up because this is what the EPR for packaging law is really designed to target. So Amazon is going to have to write a big check to a stewardship organization in the state of Maine based on the amount and type of packaging they're selling in. So the more unnecessary and problematic bubble wrap and all the unrecyclable plastics that they're including, they're going to have to pay a big fee for those things. And hopefully that'll be enough of an economic incentive to not use them or find some other better, more sustainable packaging option, and there'll be help for them to do that. And I think, since it's not just Maine, but Colorado, California, and Oregon who are doing this, we're going to hopefully see some real big design changes in the way things are packaged.
Well, Derek, thanks so much for calling in, and good luck to you during this season. I know you're going to be super busy. We're going to move on to Susan calling from Booth Bay Harbor. Hi, Susan. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for the show. I'm really enjoying it. I think, first of all, we keep using this word policy, that policy is going to change it, which I totally agree with. But it's really about taxing, which Maine seems now to be starting down that road. But ultimately, it's what people have to pay for that's going to make people change their habits. And while I think it's lovely that a lot of people are calling and asking how to recycle and expressing enthusiasm for it, most people still don't recycle, and most people don't even, it's just not on their radar screen to recycle. Once you put a tax on, they're going to start recycling, or companies are going to start changing what they put their stuff in terms of packaging. Second, though, as an active recycler, I have to say it is so hard sometimes to figure out what I can recycle and what I can't. And part of the problem is those tiny little triangles that you have to search a yogurt container or a lettuce box or something for. They're hard to see, and it's often even harder to see what number is in the middle. In Booth Bay Harbor, they only recycle number twos. And I don't understand why something just big and bold can't be put on the front of every plastic container that is a number or recycle this or something that makes it obvious and sort of a pain in the neck for people not to adhere to.
Sure. Sarah, I think you and Matt couldn't agree more, right?
Yeah, I think that's the point. I love that people care enough about this issue to want to do better and learn more. But it's the role of policy, government, people working in this space to make it as simple as possible. We need to make it so that materials are, designed with reuse and waste in mind and recycling in mind. So from the design phase, put a really clear label about whether it goes in the trash or the recycling bin, and then make those bins available to people in their communities. And so they don't have to think about this stuff. That's kind of the goal for me to try to get to is exactly that.
Matt, is this the number one complaint that you all hear at EcoMaine? It's hard to know what to recycle.
It can be, especially when it comes to plastics, right? That's why we're here today on the show. It's those little recycling triangles are somewhat helpful, but at the end of the day, it varies by municipality, it varies by state, and you really do have to do a little bit of research sometimes, which is unfortunate. I think there's a company called How to Recycle that makes a pretty good standardized label for a lot of materials, and whether the difference is it's easily recyclable, it's not recyclable, check locally is one option, or take it back to the store. But it's a voluntary thing, and so where we get to the place where everybody can know how to throw, so to speak, is by standardizing that packaging and really taking the guesswork out of it. That would be ideal. We're not there yet, but hopefully we can keep working toward it.
Susan, thanks for your call. Catherine on Facebook writes, could your guests please speak to Maine's importing and incinerating plastic from other countries? And Catherine included a link, Sarah, to the big story last year when a whole bunch of plastic waste was found near Searsport.
Right. So I can start with that, but maybe Matt has something to add. So this was a waste to energy facility in Orrington, Maine, who was basically waste to energy facilities need a certain amount of material to come into them. They need a certain BTU value. That's kind of like I think of them as hungry trash monsters that need to be fed. There was a bunch of material taken from that facility because of another issue. And they had to import plastic to feed their hungry trash monster. And there was a mismanagement of the handling of that material as it was coming off and made a humongous mess that they now have to pay a lot of money for to clean up there. But that's what I know about that particular issue. I don't know if Matt has anything to add.
Sure. Yeah. It's at the ideal level, we're talking about trash or waste or recycling, whatever the material is. We want to keep that locally. That is a real issue, especially as landfills and facilities, southern New England, close to home, are really filling up. And, they're looking at tracking transporting waste, rather, thousands of miles from, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, Connecticut to Ohio to be landfilled. We want to keep this kind of a local proposition. We don't want to be in the position where we have to be importing waste like that. It's not really an ideal situation for anybody. Obviously, we can, see that accidents like that can happen. Really, we want to ensure that we are responsible in our own neighborhoods with our own waste, and put it to the best and highest use that we can.
All right, we are going to go, let's see here, to John calling from Portland. Hi, John, go ahead.
Hi there. Talking about solutions, Marin County in California has recently banned plastic foodware, and they are encouraging reuse of the foodware that's used that was currently disposable plastic or composting in that hierarchy. We could do that here in Maine. And in a place like Portland or other places that have like a food hub, set up a reuse system where the stuff gets washed and returned for reuse at restaurants. And that would be a huge step forward. It'd be groundbreaking.
Sarah, I know that there was a restaurant in Bangor that started doing that. I'm not sure how it's been going there and if that idea has expanded. What do you know?
Yes, and I think there's a lot of restaurants who are doing that on their own or somehow encouraging people to bring in their own containers, which is great. But I think what John is referring to is something I'm 100% on board with, is trying to create more of a method of that's how we do things, say in Portland and South Portland, I think are great places to start this. But it involves a little bit more coordination between the restaurants and a washing station and redistributing these things. And they're happening in large cities all over the country. And it's saving money for restaurants. It's making a better dining experience for people. And it's significantly reducing waste. And it's a really great way to increase local jobs here and keep everything really local. So I can't say enough good reasons for that. And hopefully we'll get there relatively soon.
Matt.
Yeah, there are companies, across the country working on the reusable sort of economy, I guess. And one notable big one nationwide is called Loop. But there are plenty of others who are taking advantage of this gap in the market to, promote sustainability and reuse in the food industry, but also in cosmetics and personal care products, things like that. So, the concept would be you buy some ice cream in a returnable container at the store, much like you might return a beer bottle or a soda can. So there are companies that are working towards stepping into the void on this. Hopefully, again, the reuse is above recycle and trash on the waste hierarchy. That's what we're hoping will happen and have a real economy that kind of dovetails with the recycling industry and with the waste industry so that we have more options to point to when it comes to reuse.
John, thanks for your call. We're going to go to Matt, who's calling from Sanford. Hi, Matt. Go ahead.
Hi. I just had a question. I'm not sure if it was brought up during the show, but styrofoam. I have a lot of styrofoam. I'm wondering if there's any alternatives besides throwing it in the landfill, because I feel horrible about it.
Yeah, that's right, Matt. Even though styrofoam is not used nearly as much as it used to be and is illegal in many instances, a lot of people have, what would you say, heritage styrofoam in their basement, maybe that old cooler or cups. What do you recommend someone does with them?
Yeah, styrofoam is a really tricky one, Matt, and I empathize. I have some to get rid of myself. The prospect of recycling styrofoam is completely antithetical to sustainability. It can be recycled. I believe the closest facility to Maine that would be able to recycle it is in New Jersey. And for EcoMaine or anybody else, really, to transport a semi-truck, an 18-wheeler full of styrofoam, which is essentially air, is going to emit all these diesel fumes. It's not going to be good for, the petroleum. It's not going to be good for emissions and it's not efficient. So the styrofoam at the end of the day is unfortunately trash. There's not much of a way around that. And that's, kind of why we're hopeful that the styrofoam ban in Maine for container, food containers can work. But, when it comes to those big blocks of styrofoam, they just can't be recycled, unfortunately.
Sarah.
Sure. I think that's one of those types of plastics that we should just stop using. There are better alternatives. There's ways to protect our goods from breakage on the way to us. And we should just start using those. And that's part of the plastics pact that I mentioned earlier, that those companies agree to stop using it. So I hope that they put their money where their mouth is and do it.
Yeah. And Matt Grondin, let me ask you this. I know that EcoMaine would be incinerating not only styrofoam, but other plastics. Tell me about that process. If you are incinerating plastics that are not recyclable, is that safe? Are there fumes? Are there dangerous chemicals that are going into the environment?
Yeah. So where we're combusting these plastics, these non-recyclable plastics, there's certainly, it offputs pollution, specifically, dioxin, furans can result. But what's the good news is that EcoMaine has, you know, a really rigorous pollution control system in place, where we're monitoring, 24 hours a day, the contents of our waste to energy facility here, and proud to say that we are consistently below the state and federally mandated levels, often by quite a bit. And
great, that's
it's
wonderful.
Something we're proud to do.
Well, thank you to both of you, Matt Grondin, Director of Communications and Public Affairs for EcoMaine, and Sarah Nichols, Sustainable Maine Director for the Natural Resources Council of Maine. Today's sound engineer was George Thomas. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the show, how we cope with the constant threat of shootings. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.